This is ABC Riverina. I'm Anne Delaney. You're listening to Digital Living with Dr. Barney Dalgano, Dr. Peter Adams and Phil Roy. And today, Pete, one of your favourite topics, and I know one you and I have spoken about at length numerous occasions, and we're giving an update on the NBN.
Yeah, so over the last sort of month or so, the second phase announcements for NBNCo, or high-speed broadband rollout in Australia. So you can go to NBNCo's website and put in your postcode or the area that you live, and it'll tell you basically the time frame for your region if you're on the announced list for the fibre rollout or fixed wireless, and we might come back to talk about what that actually means in a second. I think it's put a lot of certainty, because a lot of people were sort of waiting to say, and it's funny, the conversation seems to be changed as to whether we should or we shouldn't have it, to saying, well, we want to be on the list now.
Yeah, when are we going to get it, should we have it?
So it's sort of interesting how the national conversation has changed. And now I think it's probably time for all of us to start focusing on how we're going to get the most out of it from the country's point of view, because it's a big investment from the country, and look, it is the role of various levels of government to essentially invest in things that maybe don't...
Major infrastructure.
Yeah, major infrastructure that maybe don't commercially stack up in their own right. But that argument, I think, has been had. Probably what we need to do is start, for those people maybe coming into it without a lot of knowledge, is maybe just talk about what it means to with fibre wireless. So there'll be three ways that people get access to high-speed internet in the future. That'll either be through a fibre connection, and so if you live in, and the rough rule of thumb is if you live in an area that's populated of 1,000 people or more, then you'll get fibre. Some places that have about 500 people or more, if you happen to be along a backhaul route, will be on there.
And this is where we've seen the vision of the techs rolling out the cables of fibre.
That's right. So it's a nice big roll of blue cable that will get hooked up. And you have the potential to get, at this stage, up to 100 megabits in speed, which is just 10 times probably what you're likely to have now, if not 100 times, depending on where you are. And so, hugely high-speed access. But that's usually in some built-up areas, and that's where you'd have to go and check the NBNCo's interactive map. The other alternative access points are for fixed wireless, and they've announced the second range of fixed wireless sort of release areas. And the third option is satellite. So if you're in somewhere that's more remote, so you're not near a built-up area, chances are, unless you're in a sort of an area that's got a few people, you're probably looking at a satellite connection.
Now, what's fixed wireless? Because that's a term that I imagine for a few people, they're thinking, hang on, fixed wireless, it's sounding a little odd. What does that mean?
Yeah, and that's probably where there's the most sort of misunderstanding. So at the moment, through your telephone provider, a lot of people, especially with smartphones, or a lot of people who have little dongles that they plug into the side of their computer, they can get access to the internet through what's the cellular telephone system. And that's mobile, so you can drive along in your car with your, and we certainly wouldn't recommend this if you're driving, but if you're the passenger in the car, you can drive along and have access to internet. As you pass from phone tower to phone tower, that system will pass you off to the next phone tower. But it's a contention-based system in the sense that those towers are designed for what they is predicted normal peak load.
This is where capacity becomes an issue.
That's right. So there might be 50 available channels on that particular tower. And if there's 70 people trying to access it, then you either can't get a line, or you've got sort of speed diminished. The fixed wireless system provided by NBNCo is a dedicated tuned wireless system to your premises, so you'll have a guaranteed, and I think at the moment the guaranteed minimum speed is 12 megabits, which is still hugely faster than, especially a lot of people live in those areas that'll be serviced by fixed wireless. They probably either have nothing now or dial up.
Is a way to explain this similar to at home, you've got your broadband going into your house through your home modem, and you've got your router, so that if you're sitting on your laptop at the kitchen table, you don't need to be connected to the router by a cable. You can do it through your own Ethernet around the house. That it's a bit like that, but on a grand scale, that they're providing it. You hook into your own network at home, your own local area network. It's usually, if you're smart, it's locked and protected so that you have your pass keys to get in. That it's a bit like that there's a reserved place for you on this fixed wireless network, and it's dedicated to your premises, so it's a bit like that.
Yeah, and the slight difference with your home one is, which is sort of more, you know, within, say, 50 metres of that base station, anyone can connect. Is this thing will be a specific...
Dedicated to you.
...dedicated line that's... So really the difference is the signal's coming to your wireless instead of a cable running from that tower directly to your house.
So a mobile person who's, you know, turned up in town with their laptop can't use that because they're not, they didn't purchase
it's
access
not like
to their tower.
Pilfering
that's
bandwidth
right.
from a neighbour.
So you're right, Barney, they're different networks. So the mobile phone network will still exist. You'll still be able to have that mobile internet access for when you're travelling. The difference is you're getting a guaranteed level of service through the fixed wireless. And the interesting part about the rollout announcement, of course, is it takes a long time. And the biggest cost with the build is, of course, digging up, you know, all the trenches or replacing fibre, et cetera, putting in the ground, the fixed wireless rollout will probably happen within a couple of years. So all those people who are on the fixed wireless schedule will actually have high sort of levels, high speed access before a lot of the places that have been announced in the fibre rollout
so
anyway.
So is it either or then? Your town is either going to be on fixed wireless or it's going to be on fibre?
Where you happen to live, it's either or. And for the bigger centres, so those bigger... centres that are 1,000 or more that have been announced, you will get fibre if you live in the built-up area, for want of a better description. If you're on the fringe areas of those towns and you've been announced for fixed wireless. So depending on where you live, you're either going to get fixed wireless or you're either going to get fibre. You're not going to get both. So you're not going to get a fixed wireless service to tick you over for a couple of years until the fibre arrives.
And then if you're in the middle of nowhere, you get satellite.
That's
your
right.
Hope.
And I mean, depending where people who are, obviously people in Australia who happen to listen to this podcast, aside from our local listeners, if you get a chance to go down to Melbourne, there's a thing called the NBN Discovery Centre. You can book a session there. It lasts for 30 minutes, and it's a hugely useful experience because you get to physically see the equipment. They show you, they explain what it's doing. It's an excellent use of your time. It's based down in Docklands, and if you go to NBN Co's website, you can just book a 30-minute session. If you are happen to be in an area where there's also a truck that's travelling around called the NBN Discovery
which
Truck,
we've seen travelling
which has come through our region, only a few weeks ago. It's well worth, you know, they spend 20 or 30 minutes, give you good hands-on. You can actually see what's going on, ask lots of questions. And, I think once, you know, at the end of the day, people, you know, when you make a mobile phone call, you have no idea what's happening. You don't know whether it's, you know, obviously it's going wirelessly from there to the signal. You don't know whether it's going through fibre. You know, people, we need to get over this. Like, it's just going to happen and then worry about what we're going to use it for.
So I like the idea of going down to the Melbourne Centre because apart from having it hands-on, explaining it, seeing it, make you feel more comfortable, but you can go to the NBN Centre on the Friday Arvo, catch a footy at Docklands on Friday night. Well, what a good weekend!
It's literally a stone. It's across the road.
What a good weekend.
What's the time frame for the fixed wireless? Is that the same time frame as the phase one announced for the optical rollout as well?
Yeah, I'd have to go and check their own releases, to be honest. But I think we're actually up to phase two for the optical, because we've got places who've already got the optical fibre in now. So I think the most recent announcements they might call phase two, but I'm not 100% sure on my terminology. But the wireless time frame, my understanding is we're talking less than 2 years and it'll all be rolled out. They've given themselves at least 3 years, I think, for the fibre, and that's literally
because of the physicality.
Because you just have to go and put it, you know, pipes and pits. They have to go and check everything, and all these announcements that have happened sort of in the last month or so have all been predicated on, of course, the deal with Telstra. That was really the sticking point with whether they could use the existing Telstra infrastructure to access their pit and pipe. Yeah, obviously it's a lot easier to go and check somebody's existing pit and pipe and drag a cable through if you need to than it is to trench a whole new one.
Now, so that's all gone through. My understanding is that Telstra shareholders have accepted the proposal from Telstra that NBN was at leases for 99 years all the ductwork in the ground that Telstra has.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think it's something like 99 years. So, anyway, not something we're going to have to worry about by the time the agreement's over.
Let's steer away from some of the policy associated with this because, gee, that's a discussion for another day and can we get weighed down in that and talk about something that we have touched on a regular basis, and this is the benefits that are coming with a high-speed broadband network. Whatever you happen to call it, high-speed broadband can deliver certain services, but we have to be mindful to balance that with impacts in country communities particularly.
Well, it's interesting, and I guess all of us have worked on the educational side through Charles Sturt University with distance education, and in some ways it's a similar analogy to saying, do things have to be delivered in a face-to-face format, or can they be delivered remotely? So in the old days, you literally walked into your local TAFE university or whatever to learn. The likes of Charles Sturt University and Deakin really pioneered this distance model. So in fact, it didn't matter where you were, you could study. Well, now with high-speed broadband access, a lot of services, and education and health, I think, are the two areas where we really will get the benefit. It takes the geography out of it. But I wonder whether there's two sides to the coin. So while there's benefits that you can have a remote health consultation if you do live in a remote area, for example, there's nothing stopping somebody, for example, living in the middle of Canberra, having a remote consultation with somebody in New York. So all of a sudden, when you can do it remotely by high-speed internet connection, is all of a sudden that person on the other side of the world just as big or expert as the person in the clinic down the road.
So in other words, the concern becomes, after years and years of pushing to make sure we retain face-to-face services of certain things in country areas, the bricks and mortar, if you like, of health and education in regional areas, this could be something that does become possibly some kind of threat if it's not managed well, that we could see people leaving the region virtually to go and get their consultations.
It was just something that we come up in discussion. And there's nothing stopping me, aside from the IQ deficit, of enrolling in Stanford tomorrow if they offer a distance course. So I guess in an educational sense, that happens now. People could study remotely in any overseas institution, but I don't see that happening as a huge trend.
I suppose the thing is, the point you made, Anne, that if it's not well managed is the important thing. And you can, just as you can imagine, maybe driving GPs who are in rural areas that are, maybe there's not sufficiently enough people there to really justify it. If all those people go online to get their health services, then that person goes out of business. But it could equally well go the other way, so that all of a sudden, instead of having to get a referral from your local GP and go off to Sydney to see a specialist, you might actually be able to see your GP and video conference to the specialist and actually have a concurrent appointment with the specialist and your GP, and all of a sudden you've got a much better access to services.
Complementary
in the local
services.
Area.
A huge value. I mean, that's a classic example where it'd add a huge amount of value. I mean, that doesn't even happen now, like in the ELSI area, where you'll get a referral from your local GP, then you go off to see the specialist separately, and they're not in the same room, so I could see
even
that.
Even when they're in the office next door to each other, because they can't. Yeah, but I mean, that's the sort of thing that's being piloted at the moment. And the same in the education space. I mean, there's some classic examples of schools in our region where a bunch of small schools get together and collectively offer a range of Year 11 and 12 subjects, but one school's offering chemistry and the other three are coming in via video conference for chemistry. Another school's offering physics and the students in all of those schools are beaming into that one for physics. All of a sudden you've got a much wider range of subject choice, and the teachers are still located in the small communities, but they're not all in one space.
Another example, I think, with for us at the university is not necessarily in these early days about actual individual students, because we have to be really mindful that, as this thing rolls out, some students will have access to high bandwidth and some won't. But the uni has a lot of partners that it works with in that education process. So when students are out doing prac work or doing work placements, and that occurs across a whole range of sectors, the education stuff with students doing pracs, a lot of the medical courses, students are out in prac placements, things like pharmacy, vet science, a lot of the courses, professional courses, people are out doing pracs. And so there's a need for us to communicate with the students, have the students coming back to CSU and their supervisors that are out at these places. So, that's one real advantage that we should be able to pick up on pretty early is, opening up those opportunities between the uni and our partners to provide those sort of services to students while they're away from the university doing their work experience.
Now, we've been watching the stages as they're unfolding, the rollout of phase one, phase two, wherever we're up to, plus the ongoing discussions about fixed wireless. What about dollars, the pricing? Because we know some, I think the majors have all released their pricing plans. How are they looking?
Actually, surprising doesn't look too bad from my point of view. It's really difficult to understand, as it is with any of the broadband plans. You pick any of the major carriers and they do their darndest to try and confuse you about what you're actually paying for. But sort of having a bit of a broad sweep, and most of the ISPs or broadband providers do have NBN pricing up available now, so most of them will have pricing up there. Prices ranging from $35 upwards, depending on the characteristics of the service you get. And those sorts of things, the things that influence how much you pay is, firstly, the service that you're getting. So is it just broadband or is the phone going to be thrown in with it? So they're the main sort of two there. And then how much can you download in a month? So in other words, the quota. And at what speed? And that's the broadband speed. Yeah. So all those factors go into creating various packages that the carriers provide.
And that's right. You don't have to opt for maximum data downloads at maximum speed. Some people obviously will. I know a handful of people who I can guarantee will opt for those kind of packages. But you can go for the basic, look, we're going to give you some access, but it's not sexy, it's just your basic access.
So just a pure vanilla basic access at a speed of 12 megabits per second down and 1 megabit per second back up into the network, 50 gig a month quota, $35 with one of the carriers. If you go for the higher speed stuff, so you want the full 100 meg download speed and 45 meg up, you know, that goes up to the somewhere between $45 and $60, depending on the carrier.
So basically similar prices to what we're paying at the moment for much, much lower speeds and much lower data limits.
Yeah. What sort of quotas are we looking at for some of those higher packages?
100 gig sort of quotas, and then 100 gig, what does that mean? They have their on-peak and off-peak and all the rest of it. But, yeah, somewhere between 50 and 100 gig. Bundles where you have the phone thrown in and some access to content and that sort of stuff, that's where it starts to look like more expensive. You know, a bundle package with 200 gig quota, 100 meg speed with the downloads and the phone is $100. Add to that some media stuff, so access to content, movies and sport and so on. Add another $50, so sort of $150 a month.
The interesting thing to me is that you think 100 gig is a lot, because at the moment you might have a 5 gig limit or something, but as soon as you've got a much greater bandwidth, when you're downloading a video, you're going to download a high definition video or a high definition version of a television show that you're going to watch later, and all of a sudden you've downloaded 10 gig in an hour, and 100 gig is nothing. So it's really interesting how that'll blow out.
Yeah, well, once upon a time, I thought, I'm never going to use 50 gig. Now I'm sort of sitting there going, I'm never going to use 200, and going, oh, dear. So you can, depending on what you use, how much your recreational uses as well as your work uses. So, it's possibly better to overestimate your usage because of penalties involved in going over your quota. That's when you can also get some really expensive, nasty surprises.
And it's probably not the time to sign up to a long-term plan. Like, I wouldn't be signing up to a 3-year plan or anything now. You want to, commit yourself for 12 months or so, but the prices are only going one way. They're not going up.
So, I mean, my reading of it is that it's very comparable to what we have at the moment in terms of the amount you'd pay, and that where you see these greatly increased costs, like $150 a month, that's where everything, including the kitchen sink, has been thrown in.
I do have a question for you then about the take-up of it and who can opt out of it, because I know that there are some people, only a small section of the community, I might say, who are saying, look, we actually don't want it. We don't want it coming to our house. We don't want to have to pay for the connection. We don't want to have anything to do with it. We don't have internet at the moment and we're quite fine. Thank you. I know that obviously that will change perhaps in another generation's time, where it will be just expected, like electricity, water, gas, phone, internet. But for a very small percentage of the community, they don't want to have anything to do with it, and they own their house and are saying, look, I don't want it connected, I don't want to pay. Is there an opt-out?
My understanding, and I'm not an expert, is that this is actually an opt-in system. So you actually say, yes, I want the NBN, and it will be converted. It just doesn't happen automatically that someone's going to start pulling a cable through your front yard to plug you in. And that they do have measures about the take-up rate, the number of people that are saying, yes, I'll have it. It's coming down my street. Yes, I'll have it.
Do they do that? Excuse me, ma'am, do you want internet at your house?
All that.
Want to buy some internet?
My understanding, the financial motivation is that if you get it done as part of the rollout, there isn't a cost. But if you say no thanks, and then a couple of years down the track decide, oh, you know, maybe we should have got it, well, then you're going to have to pay something for it.
And to be honest, if you're looking at your property, if in a couple of years you want to sell that property and you don't have the internet connected, that will be a really big black mark on your property for sales.
And so you'd be mad to say no to it on the basis that you can't see a use for it at the moment, because it's not going to be till most people have got it, till we actually see television being delivered, your pay TV coming over the internet, everything coming over the internet. So all of a sudden, you know, you can have the current 10 or 15 channels or 100 channels over the internet.
And there'll be still
but sorry,
nothing
you
on.
Said no to the to the broadband, so you can't get that football game.
Or something that isn't about television at all. Or, you know, it's your power company saying, listen, if you've got broadband, we'll install a smart meter on your power coming, your electricity supply to your house, and you'll get a cheaper rate because we'll switch your power.
Or if you don't install it, we'll charge you $50 a quarter to come and read your meter.
Yeah, something like
or,
that.
Or if you're not in great health, if you're elderly or frail, if you have the internet on at your house, the doctor can say, look, we can set up some active monitoring here. We can detect that if you haven't had particular activities by certain times, we know that maybe not everything's okay and we can come and check on you. But if you don't have access to this broadband, then I'm sorry, we can't help you. If you have a fall, well, gee, I hope your neighbour spots that.
I think down the track, and this is where you're probably better off talking directly to someone from NBN Co, but we've got a universal service obligation at the moment, and that sort of debate gets rolled into what they end up doing here. And even if you don't want broadband, all that would happen is that if they put the fibre to your house, your telephone signal would be going down the fibre, not copper. And I mean, at the end of the day, 99.9% of people wouldn't know what goes out of their telephone anyway. So the danger is that, you know, they're planning to decommission the copper network. So I'm not really sure if you choose to opt out. And once again, my understanding is it's actually almost a state-by-state thing. So they were talking about New South Wales, Victoria having an opt-in system, whereas Tasmania had an opt-out system. Now, why that is, I have no idea, but obviously it's got something to do with the legal systems in the states. But you'd sort of be shooting yourself in the foot. If you just want a telephone service, that's fine. Nothing's going to change, really. You just have a telephone on your wall. But at some point, in doing this, they're going to decommission the copper system. So if you choose not to have it and your telephone's still coming via copper, this is where the fibres roll out, I might add. If you're in a fixed wireless area, your phone's still going to be via a copper system.
Oh, is it? Okay, yep. Right.
So where they're rolling fibre out, I'm not really sure where that leaves you if you decided to opt out.
And it's like the TV situation. If you balked at buying a digital TV or balked at buying a set-top box, well, you're pretty stuffed when they turn the analog network off.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter how much you protest, it's not going to help.
It's probably another one of those things we might need to do a bit of specific research on and sort of update on a later show. But it'll be interesting to see. But as Barney alluded to, it's this whole network reciprocity idea that if you're the only person who's got it, then it's not that useful. All of a sudden, when everyone else has got it or more people have got it, it becomes more and more useful to you. I mean, how many years ago would we have thought that we need anything more than a dial-up internet connection just to email, you know, photos? And now you've got digital cameras that are, you know, probably taking 20 meg
Bill
files
Gates.
Or something.
Who would have thought we would have needed more than 64K data?
The phone thing raises an interesting problem that raises the whole phone side of things, which is the power to the phone. So at the moment, standard analog phone at someone's home is powered back by the exchange. You don't have to plug your phone into the power point to get it to work, unless it's a cordless phone, of course. So in the case of a blackout when there's no power, a standard analog phone,
you
not cordless, but a standard analog one that's plugged into the wall will still work. With the NBN, the power doesn't come down the optical cable. So one of the things they're doing is putting batteries in, a small UPS battery that'll keep the equipment running for a period of time in case there's a blackout.
Battery backup, how quaint.
Well, you know, the challenge is then that, you know, how far is that going to extend? And that's an operating cost. You know, batteries don't last forever. At some stage, we're going to have people managing, you know, having to sort out the story when batteries go flat or become end of life at the end of...
It's the whole management of the batteries, disposal of the batteries, where do you get the new ones?
And the thing is that you won't know that your battery's gone until you get a power blackout, which you can't report because your phone doesn't work. Well,
and you know, are they going to let you pop the back of your phone open to put it in yourself, or do you need to pay $400 for a Telstra technician to come in and do it for you?
Yeah,
you can't ring up because your phone doesn't work.
That's because your phone's dead. I see the plan here.
I think I might keep the mobile.
Yeah, assuming the power's that. So, yeah, and it's not... I mean, these... The whole battery thing was a big debate for a long time too, because it's a massive cost when you think of just adding a battery to every premises as opposed to not having it. So that's why you're glad it's not your problem. Like, it's a massive political problem going down the track of trying to figure out how it is that we're going to roll this out on a national basis. But the short message is that if you just want a telephone service, then let them roll it over, and you'll just have a telephone there that works fine, and that gives you the ability, either the next person who owns the house or yourself down the track, to plug into whatever services might come down. Because the high speed network is not just about internet access; it's about a whole heap of other services that can be delivered.
We don't know what we don't know.
And you can imagine that just as it's hard to buy an analog television now, you probably, when your phone breaks in 5 years' time and you go to buy a new phone, they're probably only cell phones that plug into the fibre network. If you're the only person with an old-fashioned copper phone, you won't be able to find a handset for it.
And it's amazing, like, going back to the digital camera example, it's amazing how quickly these things change. So it'll be really interesting to see over the next 5 years, as this gets rolled out, how quickly we have that adaptation.
We'll see exponential growth.
Yeah, well, we've seen with the digital and the analog television, as you said. You know, pretty soon there'll be no analog television, so people do actually adapt when they have to.
It's adapt or evolve or die, really, isn't it?
we hope it's not that serious, but.
Gee, I'm glad I don't live in the Delaney house.